This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello and welcome to the All 80s Movies Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the blockbusters, the flops, and everything in between from one of the freshest decades for movies, the 1980s. I'm your host, Bill Bant, and along with me in our latest journey back to the 80s is my co-host, Jason Masick. Hello, Jason.
Bill, Chainsaw, Dave, wait a minute. Look, Gills is having a cow about our field trips. Unless you guys all pass that test, my job is Memorex. Anybody got any ideas here?
Hello, listeners. Tonight is episode one of our Salute to Summer at the Cinema series, where all the movies we discuss in the month of July take place during this summer. Today's movie is the 1987 comedy Summer School, starring Mark Harmon and Kirstie Alley. Directed by Carl Reiner, this movie is rated PG-13 with a running time of 1 hour and 37 minutes. So what is this movie about? What's on the box? If you grew up in the 1980s and went to your local mom and pop video store to rent this movie, this would be the description you would find on the back of the VHS box. It is What's on the Box. Take it away, Jason.
High school coach Freddie Shoup has plans. Summer in Hawaii. But the vice principal has plans for Freddie, too. Teaching remedial English. Aloha, paradise. Hello, summer school. Director Carl Reiner delighted fans and critics alike with this warm, perceptive comedy about a laid-back teacher, Mark Harmon, who has as much to learn as his class of likable misfits. Together, they survive goof-ups and good times on the road to academic success and the self-respect that goes with it. Earn straight A's in laughter. Take summer school.
So that was What's on the Box.
That was cheese.
So let's move on to our earliest memories of the film. Jason, why don't you start us off?
Well, I just want to say hello, first and foremost, Bill. It's good to be here with you. And also, I appreciate your impressive alliteration. I mean, the opening was outstanding. I just want to give you a lot of credit for that.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. Also, I'm just going to run it back a little bit to the opening quote and just let our listeners know what the hell happened to Memorex. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember? I mean, when I heard that quote in the movie, and that's why I use it, because it is quintessential 80s, because he gets to say having a cow and Memorex in the same line, basically in the same quote. I just wanted to let everybody know that in 1996, Memorex was broken up and ceased to exist, other than as a consumer electronics brand specializing in disc recordable media for CD and DVD drives, flash memory, computer accessories, and other electronics. I'm just saying, I know there's going to be a viewer out there that's worried or concerned about Memorex or just wanted to know. So I was just going to jump right ahead to fun facts and let you know what happened to Memorex. 1996 is when it kind of ended for them. But back on point, back to earliest memories, summer school, 1987. Let's take a breath.
Okay.
Let's relax. I almost was going to say, just take a step back, take a step forward. Now we're doing the cha-cha. Different 80s movie. Let's talk about this movie. Man, I'm relaxed. I am just kicking back. And that's how this movie makes me feel. And as soon as I started thinking of the earliest memories, I just felt good. I felt happy. I felt like I didn't have a worry in the world because I must have seen this film, I mean, no less than 10 times on cable. I did not see it in the movie theater. I remember it being simple. It's a fun summer movie. It's a really easy watch. I remember thinking, that Mark Harmon pretty much had it made. This guy was living the life. He was the ideal that I wanted to be Mark Harmon. He was the coolest dude, the coolest teacher. He had the coolest dog. He had the ultimate laid back lifestyle. How could you not want to achieve that? I certainly did. I remember the sequence when they write a complaint letter, and all I could see in my mind's eye was receiving the box with all the sunglasses. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. And that's like an exercise that you kind of do in school. I remember that as a kid. Or, you know, to be honest, Bill, it's something I did repeatedly when I would collect my movie posters. If I got a movie poster in the mail and there was a dent or a crease in it, because I had like OCD and was super anal when it came to the, you know, my posters had to be in pristine condition. And I just took such good care of them. And if they arrived damaged, I immediately would send a letter, a complaint letter, and I would get a free poster. And so I had like multiples of all these great posters, and they would immediately, like Lucasfilm would send me like all the time. Mm-hmm. Like it was great. It was awesome. So when I saw this in the movie, I just like, yeah, that works. Do it. You know, the Chainsaw and Dave, these characters, come on. They're amazing. The fun type of, it's kind of a twist on the stoner. They're more rebels and they're these film geeks, but horror film geeks. And I, of course, remember them and their use of makeup effects in the film. Very memorable, very funny. And honestly, otherwise, for some reason, I was just drawing blanks, man. I didn't have much else as far as earliest memories, except for the warm, fuzzy feeling this movie gave me, just like every other 80s movie, man. The nostalgia and the feel-good effect. The fun cast of characters with also a little bit of, it has a good message attached to it. So there's nothing wrong with this movie, in my opinion. And the lesson being not to take life too seriously. And that's all I got, brother. What do you got for earliest memories?
Short and simple. The first thing I want to say about this movie is it has a really good trailer. It has a really good hook trailer. And I remember seeing that. And I was like, this is why I want to see this movie, because it's a really fun trailer. And if you can find it on YouTube, watch it, because it's a trailer. You watch this and you're like, oh, you know what? I kind of want to see this movie. It looks like a fun movie. And just like you, it has that. You just sit and you enjoy and relax, and it's not that memorable, but there's just something about it. You don't feel like you're wasting your time. It's just a good, nice 97 minutes of film watching.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like just lying on the beach and, you know, it evokes a lot of summer feelings for sure, just because of the time period, you know, when it takes place and stuff like that and where it's located. But yeah, I agree with you. Please continue.
Yeah, definitely earliest memories. Chainsaw, he's definitely stands out as a character. The tension breaker had to be done. I don't know how many times I would do that because of that.
No doubt about it.
I definitely copied the tension breaker every once in a while as a joke, just to see who else had seen Summer School besides me. I had not seen this in the theater too. I did rent it. Biggest crush on Courtney Thorne Smith.
Sure.
Loved her.
Sure.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of Shawnee Smith too.
Oh, absolutely. And kudos to Shawnee Smith. I'm just going to throw it out there right now. Sorry to interrupt. I feel the need. She has aged well. She was a cutie then. She looks good now. I'm a fan. Sorry. Please keep going.
And then, of course, Kirstie Alley. A lot of eye candy on the screen.
Yeah.
And just a really cool makeup special effects that they would show in the movie. And I wish they touched a little more, because I know Chainsaw and Dave are really into Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And it was cool, like, when you see their locker open, all the other different films.
Right.
I was like, oh, I wish they got more into that besides Texas Chainsaw. Because you definitely see the one shot from Dawn of the Dead with the hatchet and the guy in the zombie's head.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
But
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, they could have gone through it, like, just made references to a whole library of horror films, not just focusing on one.
Exactly. Yeah. Even though that was their favorite. It was just a fun movie. It was fun to go back and revisit. Yeah, it was just, there was a lot of stuff watching this that I kind of forgot, or I had things out of order of how things happened. So it was kind of cool to see, because I remember thinking that Shoop, Mark Harmon, Coach Shoop, left earlier, and then they were bringing in more than one substitute teacher. So when they so I thought that happened early in the film. So I'm watching this again and I'm like, all right, when does he walk out? When does he walk out? Why hasn't he walked out yet?
Right. Right.
It's a good fun 80s film. And if you have not watched it yet, I would definitely say check it out.
I totally agree. I think it's really easygoing. This film is the definition of easygoing. Like I said earlier, it's an easy watch. I'm just going to move right into my initial thoughts, if that's all right.
Yeah, go for it.
Mark Harmon, man, the dude is charming. He is one handsome son of a bitch. He reminds me of a buddy of mine that I had when I first moved out to LA. I was waiting tables. And shout out to my guy, Mike Smith. Miss you, man. I haven't talked to him in a long time. He was the blonde version of Mark Harmon. And let's just say, I got to admit, I was jealous of Mike all the time because he's a lady killer. I mean, he had that kind of smile and same kind of laid back attitude, kind of because he was a California guy. He was a California native and it was never, he wasn't too cocky. He wasn't braggadocious. He was aware that he was an attractive guy, but he just was like, hey, he just takes life as it comes. And he did really well with the ladies. And Mark Harmon sells this, man. He makes it really work. This is the type of movie I think I have to give so much credit to the cast. And that's part of Mark Harmon is part of this initial thought is just in general with casting was pretty spot on. And Carl Reiner talks about it. If you do the research, because they auditioned thousands as, you know, that's a normal thing for film. But between Courtney Thorne Smith and these characters, you know, Chainsaw, Dave, Kevin, like all they play all the stereotypes. They found the perfect actors that gave it a little bit extra that made these characters likable, lovable characters you want to root for. And Mark Harmon is heading it all up. And this is a movie that easily could have been a super like huge flop or wouldn't have worked on these levels because there is an element of cheese here and a predictability, this kind of movie, but it has a little bit of a charm because of the performances and they make it naturalistic in a way. They give it some realism, even though we know it's a high school teenage coming of age sort of comedy. So credit to the cast, credit to Mark Harmon, his charm, his good looks. He's extremely likable. And so you're always rooting for him. And go ahead.
Yeah, it was funny because I was thinking when I was watching this, he almost reminded me of like Chris Knight Light.
Oh, sure.
And I was trying to think, I was like, oh, if they could have got Val Kilmer, I think he would have been too young. But then he would have been playing the same character again doing this.
Right, right.
So I was really like, all right, is Mark Harmon the right person for this role? And I was really trying to go through the Rolodex of like, who would I have cast instead? But I really couldn't come up with anybody. So I'm like, no, he does work. But I think because we had just watched Real Genius, not too long ago.
Oh, no doubt about it.
I kept doing the Shoop Chris Knight comparisons in this movie.
And he's always wearing the Hawaiian shirts and shorts and kind of that. It's almost like a ridiculous outfit to be wearing in this particular. It's like a public high school, so they're not wearing uniforms per se, but still, his costumes are very laid back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they were looking. I mean, Carl Reiner did want a comedian for this role, but then came across Mark Harmon. He had watched something Harmon had done previously, and it was like, this guy has a certain relaxed way about him and his delivery and natural charisma that worked for this role. And sure enough, he nails it. Another initial thought I had was, I really like this cast of characters. I like these students. I'm going to go down the line here because you have in these high school films, the stereotypes, right? You got to go through the list. And in this movie, they give the stereotypes just enough of a tweak that it makes them a little more attractive, in my opinion, or maybe even a little bit more relatable. And I did mention, you know, this film takes place at Oceanfront High School. And we assume this is, you know, it's literally like by the beach or near the beach, Los Angeles area somewhere. Yes. And I mean, the name of the high school is Oceanfront, right? So it's great. And then, so we have we mentioned Dave and Chainsaw, right? Who are inseparable. They're like twins, but not twins. And they're, like I said, like if you were doing typical stereotype in a high school movie, they would be the stoner types, but they're not quite. They're just rebels wearing overcoats and kind of funky clothing. And they love horror movies and they're pulling off all these weird makeup effects. And they're just, you know, anti-authority. So that's typical. I mean, Chainsaw is basically a little bit a funner version of Judd Nelson from Breakfast Club. Right. I mean, he's like totally not nearly as serious or moody, but he kind of has that vibe. Right. Like, I don't give a crap about anything. And so we have Dave and Chainsaw, the rebels, not quite stoners. Then we move on to the nerd, Alan Ekian. Ekian, which is what? This is a great name. Eker, the nerd. But he's super nerdy, but he's actually not smart. So it's like, okay. Little twist there. I like that. He's really not that bright, but he's just kind of nerdy and lovable. Then you go move on to the typical dumb blonde, right? You know, you think of the dumb blonde chewing gum, but in this version, we have a spiritual surfer girl. She's a bit flighty. She's a bit distracted. That's Courtney Thorne Smith. Her character's name is Pam. Then we move on to Kevin, which is, okay, he's the dumb jock. We get it. Now that one, that's the typical stereotype. Then we move on to another character, one of our main protagonists, part of this cast of misfits, who's named Larry. We don't know who the hell he is because he's sleeping the entire time throughout the entire film, which is great. There's a little tweak. We have Rhonda, who's the pregnant teen. So you're already, you know, kind of on her side. You're rooting for her. She's got a little bit rough. Denise, the fiery Latina. We've got the hot foreign exchange student, Anna Maria. Now, that's a little bit more of a consistent stereotype there. Where I was a little upset, you know, I mentioned Dave and Chainsaw earlier. They don't really give Dave an intro. No. He doesn't get, they don't break, and he's one of the main characters. But my point being is, and I was just breaking it down for our audience a little bit, our cast of characters. So you kind of know who's who when we move on through the podcast here. So I liked that they took the stereotypes, and when you go through, because he takes roll call. That's Mark Harmon, our teacher, the PE teacher, the gym teacher, who now has to spend his summer teaching remedial English class. And again, he's, you know, it's the cast or this crew of misfits, and he has to take roll call. So it's that scene where you're introduced to all the characters, and each one is a little different than your typical stereotypes, I guess. That's my point. I don't know. Do you have any other initial thoughts you wanted to go over?
No, I did like the twist of your stereotypical characters, and I think you definitely presented them pretty well. The one thing I thought was kind of funny was here's Coach Shoop, and it seemed like the only kids in the class that knew who he was Chainsaw and Dave, which to me seemed to like be the two least likely to know, because I doubt they ever went to gym class. So I thought that was kind of funny.
That's everyone a good else, point.
Yeah. It's like he didn't know who any of them were, and really none of them knew who he was. And I was like, come on, everybody knows who the gym teacher at your school is.
Totally. Totally.
I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah. Very funny. So yeah, just to set it up again, I had mentioned, you know, we know our initially Mark Harmon was going to take off to Hawaii with his girlfriend, but he gets stuck teaching this class. And our antagonist is the evil vice president, President Gills.
Jason, it was only the vice principal, not the vice president.
Did I say vice president?
Yes. Washington,
amazing.
Washington's coming down.
I totally said. that's amazing. Vice principal Gills. Yeah, he's holding it over his head. He's saying, well, you know, you're up for tenure, and if you think you're going to get that, you better do what I say. You better teach this remedial English class. So Freddie Shoop has to do it. We're off. So what also the reason why he has to teach this class is the previous remedial English teacher. There's a cameo by the director himself, Carl Reiner, who wins the lottery. He's like in the beginning in the credits, he's doing scratch off tickets and he wins the lottery. And I just wanted to mention this in my initial thoughts because I thought the scene was absolutely hilarious when he scratches off that final ticket and he realizes he won and he's like stuttering and he's doing I won. And he runs into vice principals office, the vice principal's office, not the vice president's office, and says he won $50,000. Now, I don't know how far $50,000 would get you. Well, maybe a little further back in 1987.
It'll certainly get you through the summer.
Yeah, for sure. And he just like, he's like, I'm out of here. That's why Vice Principal Gills has to recruit Freddie Shroop, the gym teacher, to teach this remedial English class. Also, there's one moment I'm just going to say right off the bat that always gets me, and this is a very subtle thing, but later in the film, our fiery Latina Denise, after she passes her driver's test, I always love this moment when she tries to get out of the car. She's so excited that she passed the test that she tries to get out of the car, but forgets she still has her seatbelt on.
That is a great, that is funny.
And it yanks her back into the car.
Yeah.
It gets me every time. And I always look forward to that moment. And I'm just bringing that up now. I just wrote that down in my initial thoughts. There's a lot other stuff here to cover, but didn't know if you had any other thoughts you wanted to cover right off the bat.
No, I do love the Carl Reiner cameo. And yeah. It is funny because he literally has like 100 scratch offs and he's going through them all. And he gets that winner one. I'm like, doesn't he have a bunch left? And the fact that he just says $50,000, you're like, yeah, that wouldn't get you very far today. But yeah, right. I was going to the back of my mind, like, all right, and 87 money. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I would have quit right there on the spot myself. I'd say, no, I ain't teaching summer school. I'm going to take this money and I'll spend my time doing something else for the summer.
I'd be going with Shoop's girlfriend to Hawaii since she's still going. She's got the extra ticket. Why not?
Right. Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to our next segment, which is favorite scenes. What are some of our favorite scenes from summer school? Jason, what do you got?
I put down the first field trip. So we know that we've got a gym teacher teaching a bunch of these misfits, and they're trying to figure out what to do. How are they going to get through summer school? How are we going to get through the next 6 weeks? And somebody says, well, you know, we could always take field trips. And they think, well, yeah, that's a great idea. So their first field trip is to like the amusement park. And what's like they have, what do you call it? The farm animals and stuff that you can,
yeah, like petting zoo. Yeah.
Right. I found that super nostalgic. And Bill, immediately I was like, oh my God, I miss roller coasters. I need to get back to like Six Flags and get on a roller coaster as soon as possible. It just looked like a blast. And in the midst of this field trip sequence, we see them all having fun and goofing off. There's like go-karts and they're just having a freaking blast and the music's going. And then during the petting zoo sequence, you have Dave and Chainsaw come out of like there's a little bunnies that they're like Anna Maria, the exchange student, she's petting one and it's all adorable and cute. And Dave and Chainsaw come out with these bunnies attached to their faces as if they're being mauled and attacked by these bunnies, and they tear their like cheeks and there's blood everywhere. But of course, Chainsaw and Dave have created these makeup effects just to make that look like they're being attacked by bunnies. And it shocks everyone at first, but then of course they realize it's all, you know, BS. But I like that scene. It just gets me nostalgic for theme parks. Yeah, that was my first favorite scene.
Yes, it was the best bunny mauling scene since Monty Python's
bunny mauling scene. That's great.
Since Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So
yeah. Good call.
No, it is a good scene. It is a lot of fun how they cram all that stuff in. I would have went to summer school if I knew that's what that certainly entailed. My first favorite scene of the film is Denise's driving lesson.
Yep.
So what happens is after they get busted for going on these field trips, Shoop pretty much gets the ultimatum from Vice Principal Gill that if all these kids don't pass this remedial English test, you're going to lose your job. So Shoop goes back to the class and says, look, I need your help. I got to get you guys to pass this test. And they're like, okay, we'll learn, but you got to do us a favor. So
right.
All the classmates have to do a favor. And the favor that Denise has is she wants to pass her driving test. And we come to find out Denise should not be behind the wheel whatsoever. Right. She has no clue when it comes to driving. So what happens is one of the favors that Chainsaw and Dave asked for is basically like a chauffeur service to take them to the beach all the time. So it's Denise, Chainsaw, and Dave, and they get in the car.
Yep.
And Shoop pulls over. And he's like, all right, Denise, we're going to do your first lesson. And Chainsaw and Dave jump out right away. Like, nope, we were in driving class with her. There's no way we're getting this car with you.
It's great. Yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, because Shoop doesn't realize what he's getting into. Because he's like, oh, okay, they're just exaggerating.
How bad could she be?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's hilarious, too, because he finally talks them into the car. And they all sit. And there is that like classic quote from Chainsaw. He's like, well, let me drive instead. And Shoop's like, no, you've been drinking. He's like, well, the reason drunk drivers get in accidents because they don't know how to drive drunk.
Right.
Which, yeah. I was like, there is a very skewed logic behind that. But yeah, I don't think we should.
No. And then, yeah. And Harmon gives him a little like anti-drinking message right there, too. He's like, because it means, you know, you can't drive drunk. But also it says
about brain cells.
That's drinking right.
Kills brain cells. Yeah.
And if you lose one more. Because there's a little bit, too, when they do get into the car and Dave and Chainsaw are in the back seat. And they do this in a lot of movies as if this is going to somehow protect them from Denise's terrible driving. They lock the doors.
Yes.
They press the lockdown. Like, that's going to
He slaps that bad boy with some authority. Yeah. Like, boom.
Right.
And then Shoop's like, all right, go ahead, pull out. And Denise does this thing where she looks in the street, looks ahead. And they're just on a side residential road. There are no cars whatsoever. And
right.
She does this like four or five times. And the Shoop's like, hey, you gonna go?
And the great part is every time she looks back, Chainsaw looks back too. Cause he's right behind her in the back seat. He's like, what is she looking at? Why does she keep? So she looks back and then he looks back and then she looks back and he looks back.
And then so she finally pulls out in the road and she starts going down. And it's like I said, it's a residential street, but it's a two-way street. And then you see a car coming the other way and she panics and literally just pulls over. And it was great because you knew right away. She's like, that's how fearful she is in a car that she cannot have another car on the other way.
Right.
And she's like, what are you doing? And then Chainsaw makes a quip about the old lady's like, oh, yeah, some old lady in a wheelchair just lapped us.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And then he gets her back on the road and they go down maybe half a block and they see two cars and he asks her to parallel park and she does the worst parallel parking job ever. I mean, it's terrible.
Oh yeah. Well, she backs up and she's like,
rides turns up the curb.
Yeah. I love that. She misses both cars entirely. Like you assume she's going to nail one of the cars.
Yeah. That's what you think too. You would think she'd do this typical hit. But
no. She parks completely perpendicular. There's nothing parallel about it. She like backs up right over the curb and into the like lawn and the bushes and misses the cars completely. But she's parked perpendicular to the other cars, which is great.
And then Shoop's like, all right, lesson's over.
Yep, that's it.
That scene just had a lot of chuckles for me. It just made me chuckle a lot. I thought it
was
a little fun scene. Yeah, I mean, this movie is basically just a little bunch of vignettes strung together. And it's just like, what one's hit and which one's miss. And this one was, for me, a hit.
And it's, again, a credit to the actors, man. It's just the charm of all these characters and these actors. They just kind of pull it off because there's nothing really extraordinary about any of the sequences or, like you said, vignettes. We know we've seen these sequences before. We kind of see what's coming here, but it's still fun. They make it fun. They just do. You know how real genius was just bang, 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 bang with the quotes.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't quite as clever as that, but it is consistently funny, in my opinion, like or lighthearted humor all throughout. And
yeah,
the jokes that they do land, they're not belly busters.
No. I just chuckled a lot.
Yeah.
Just a lot of little like.
Exactly. About the movie. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nailed it. A lot of chuckling.
What do you got for your next favorite scene?
I'm going to go a little bit out of order. I'm going to save my favorite scene for the end. I'm going to skip to Chainsaw's nightmare the night before the big test.
Oh, okay.
Because this is something we all experience, I think, is the student nightmare. You know, if you've been in school long enough or you've stressed over an upcoming test or just going to school in general, man, finals, all of that, you tend to have school nightmares. And I've had them. I've woken up in the middle of the night going, oh my God, I thought I was late for class. I thought I'd missed the test. I thought I had failed the test. I thought that I'd forgotten everything that I had studied the night before. Just a litany of different school-related nightmares that you can have. So this was great that they put that in there. and Chainsaw is just sweating bullets, you know, and he has the nightmare where he wakes up and it's like the perfect, you know, something's off because there's just no way he wakes up and he goes out into the kitchen and the breakfast is being made. And it's a, just a really happy, perfect family scenario. And he's sitting down at the table about to have breakfast. And then he starts forgetting everything. He just doesn't know anything. And he's just like, I don't know. I don't know. And then he wakes up, he's sweating, and his mom comes running in because he's screaming. He wakes up and the parents come in and they try to console him. And they're like, what were you dreaming about? What were you, did you have a nightmare? What were you, what was going on in your mind or whatever? He's like, I don't know. it's funny. It's amusing. I like that sequence. That one is a memorable one for me because I can relate. Simple as that.
In the beginning, when he first wakes up in the dream, I kind of thought, oh, okay, it's just an exaggeration that he feels like he's ready for the test. But as soon as he walked into the
kitchen.
Then I was like, oh, yeah, this is totally something else. And that's when I realized. So it did get me initially because I just thought it was one of those.
Yeah.
You know, he stopped drinking for a couple of days. So
right.
It just kind of changed his outlook on life. I'm like, oh, okay. So he's actually prepped. And I'm like, oh no, there's something off about this. So it did get me at first, but yeah, I thought it was a kind of funny take on the nightmare test dream scenario. So yeah, that is a good one.
How about you, man? What's your next one?
So my next favorite scene is in the court.
Oh yeah, sure.
So what happens is Chainsaw and Dave are on the beach and they're drinking. And two cops come up to him and they basically catch him and luckily shoot going by on his roller skates. And for some reason, they happen to be in front of Shoop's house, too. And Shoop kind of takes the blame for the alcohol. And
yeah.
Shoop gets arrested for it, saying, oh, no, that was mine. And I just left it there and I didn't mean for them to drink it. And the kids are like, oh, yeah, we're sorry. So the cops let them go with a warning, but they arrest Shoop for giving alcohol to minors.
Minors,
so,
right.
Yeah. So he's got to go to court for it. So this becomes another field trip. So the whole class is in there. While Shoop is in court and the kids think they're going to help by speaking up for Shoop. The judge in this, he was just great because he had that, like, I've seen it all before. He's just rolling with it. And there's a great exchange where the judge goes to Dave. He's like, so where did you get the alcohol from? And David's, that whole exchange is just hilarious. From Murray.
Right.
Everybody knows Murray. And the judge's like, who's Murray?
Yeah.
You know, Murray's Liquors. And the judge is like, well, did you show them ID in order to get it? He's like, oh, yeah. And then the judge's like, well, why don't you show me this ID? And Dave, you know, goes up, gives the ID. And the judge is like, wait, you were born in 1968.
Yeah. Right.
And served in the military.
And served, you were in Vietnam.
He's like, the war changes you.
Right. And he's a black guy that, on top of it all. Yeah. Not only is 1968 war veteran and used black. Like, the war really changes you.
And then it's funny too, because then even for some reason, Christy Alley, who plays Robin, is there at the court too. And she comes up to speak. And she starts trying to give her big speech to save Shoop. And the judge kind of halts right there and is like, you're out of order. And just the way he's like, yeah, I know where this is going. I'm just going to cut you off.
Right.
And he's like, all right, I'm just going to let you go with a warning. And everyone gets excited. And then Dave tries to slowly steal the ID.
That was smooth. Just, yeah. He's like, he's looking the other way when he's at the same time, like pulling the ID off the judge's table there.
Yeah, that judge just made me laugh. That just made me laugh how he just handled that court.
It's a pretty loose scene. I actually was going to bring it up later, but yeah, I'll bring it up later.
It's I have issues with it too, but
it's still, it's fun. Again, it's just this lighthearted, the judge rolls with it. He knows how it's going to go and he doesn't take it too seriously.
Yeah. The judge is smooth, and just Dave's delivery of the Murray lines just cracked me up too. Just like Murray.
That was very amusing.
Yeah. He made me laugh in that. So definitely another little short vignette. It's a really short scene, but I must have laughed 3 or 4 times in that one.
Yeah. No, it's great. All right. So I'm going to go straight to my favorite scene.
This is mine.
Yeah. It's the most memorable scene for me. And I'm just calling it the Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, it's the scene that I think about when I think of this movie. And the setup for this particular scene is that Freddie Shute, Mark Harmon, has quit. He's done. He's given up. He did everything he could to try to get these kids to straighten up. And they're just not, you know, what they wanted to do is they wanted to renegotiate their contract, because as Bill mentioned earlier, the deal was that they would get their act together if Shoup would do a favor for each one of them. And now that the big test is coming up and they're going to have to even study harder for the test, they're on a renegotiate. And they're like, well, you got to do us another favor. And Shoup is like, you ungrateful sons of bitch. He's like, you know, I'm out. I'm done. It's not worth my time. I tried. And he quits. And so Vice Principal Gills has to bring in a new substitute to take over this remedial English class. And here's this meek woman that comes in, and she previously taught grammar school, I believe.
Yeah.
And now she's walking literally into the lion's den here with this group of miscreants. And when she walks in, well, before she even gets to walk in, I believe it's Denise comes out, and she's just covered in blood.
Yes.
Just covered in blood. She's like, oh my God. Oh my yes. God.
Is that your blood?
Right. The substitute teacher's like, they go into the room and it's just a bloodbath and it's a massacre where you have, oh my gosh. I mean, to go down the list, you've got
Anna Marie's hung and impaled in the wall.
Right. You have a hand crawling across the table, a severed hand crawling across the table. You've got Larry, who's been sawed in half, and he's trying to put his intestines back into his body. You've got Alan Ekian coming out of a locker with a saw blade embedded in his skull, and there's blood everywhere. You have got poor Rhonda. What does she have, like, shoved in her mouth?
I think it's like a 6-inch ruler.
What I figured. Okay. So her cheeks are spread open, and she's dead. And then, of course, the icing on the cake here, you have Chainsaw and Dave show up with actual chainsaws just going off. At this point throughout, you know, the music is heightened and the substitute teacher is screaming at every shot, and it's just like, dun, dun, dun. And you see all these wonderful makeup effects. And we understand, because of what's happened earlier in the movie, like Bill so appropriately called it, the bunny mauling scene. That was kind of a setup for this scene, which happens later, where we know it's makeup effects and we know it's a setup just to scare the hell out of the substitute teacher. It's the best version of that, right? Because as students ourselves going through, we always, you got to razz that substitute teacher a little bit. You got to give the sub a little bit of a hard time. And this is like the extreme, most extreme version of that. So the substitute teacher freaks out and leaves. And then they team up to go back and get Shoup to come back and teach them and finish this court and get them through that final test. So, but this sequence it's just a blast because they all are in on it, each student, and they each have these wonderful makeup effects that I still honestly hold up to this day. Like, it's just great stuff. And I'm going to skip to the fun facts and trivia here, man, and just say that Carl Reiner planned to shoot the scene on October 31st. It was Halloween, so that these kids could actually go out with these effects still in place and their costumes and enjoy Halloween with professionally done makeup effects. So it's a really, really fun scene. If you know, is it gory? Of course it is, but you know, it's fake. You got to go with it and have fun with it. It's a blast.
Yeah. And that's definitely my favorite scene too. And I think what's funny too, with White, with Vice President Gill.
Vice President.
You got me doing it too.
I thought you were making fun of me. I'm like, you son of a Gill. No.
Vice Principal Gill is, after the initial shock, he knows exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of standing there like, all right.
He's literally shaking his head.
Yeah. And instead of trying to calm down the substitute, he's just, all right, let's just see what happens next.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he should have at least turned to her and be like, no, this is a hoax. And she goes running out. And just to, another fun fact is the special effects in the film were done by Rick Baker.
He's uncredited. Yeah. It's how awesome is that?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a lot of nods. This movie is a little bit self-aware at times, which is really cool because they, because Chainsaw and Dave are film aficionados, horror film aficionados, and I think it's supposed to be like a book report, but it's more like a movie report that they do. And they talk about Rick Baker. Yeah. That's their report. And I'm like, how cool is that? They're talking about, and Rick Baker is,
he's a very, 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 very good
artist. Very, very. That's 100 words. Exactly. Yes. We counted.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
But yeah, it's definitely the signature scene of the film. And the effects are awesome. Definitely with Larry there trying to literally shove his guts back into his chest. You're just like, oh, man.
Yeah.
So that was the PG-13 right there.
Yep. Lot of fun. So that's definitely my favorite scene.
So let's move on to soundtrack. So soundtrack was... Yeah, done by Danny Elfman.
The one and only.
Yeah, definitely one of his earlier film scores. Jason, you want to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of earliest memories, when 1989 rolled around, there was a little movie that came out called Batman. I'm Batman. And I'll never forget getting the soundtrack to the film. Because I saw the movie, I was blown away. I loved it. Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson, brilliant, right? So the music, though, the thematic music, and now you know me, I'm a JW guy. I'm a John Williams guy, big on themes. But this was just different. This had a different sound to it, but extremely thematic. And I was like, what is this music? I want it. I want to listen to it all the time. I'm inspired by it. And my imagination just goes with it. And it was Danny Elfman, who was the composer of the Batman score. And I've been a fan ever since. The late 80s, all the way through the 90s, Danny Elfman is one of the major players as far as film composing in the industry. And so he does the score for this film. It's okay. This particular film, it's okay. And it's notable that this film contains the only completely unreleased Danny Elfman film score to date. Completely unreleased.
Yeah, because I was thinking that too, because I was shocked when I saw his name in the credits, because I have a lot of his stuff, and I have his best stuff, and I'm like, it's not even on there.
Yeah, no.
And it kind of comes in and out throughout the movie. It's not like an underlying theme throughout, but when you hear it, you know it's him.
Yeah, definitely.
But definitely. Yeah, I was like the same thing. I was like, why have I never seen this anywhere before? Or just, part of a compilation where it's just pieces. Because I don't think there really is enough for a soundtrack, but with this compilation, I thought.
Right, sure, and there's so much lyrical music used in this soundtrack as well.
Yeah.
Actual songs.
And he does sing a song. I think does he do
the end credits?
The end credits. Okay, that's where his song comes in. Happy. It's called Happy.
Right. And it's Oingo Boingo.
Because in the credits it says
performed by Danny Elfman.
Right. But then everywhere else it says it's
in the research, it's Oingo Boingo. Right.
Which I thought he had left at that point.
But in 87.
I'm not sure too, because Oingo Boingo, I think, appears in Back to School.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know which way it was. Yeah, I was kind of confused because it was like, is it Oingo Boingo?
They could have come together to record that track.
Yeah.
They may have not been officially like the band's back. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Regardless, I'm a big Danny Elfman fan, and he does have that signature sound, just like John Williams, James Horner, Jerry Goldsmith. They each have, when you hear it, you know it. You're like, yep, that's James Newton Howard. That's John Williams. That's Howard Shore. That's Thomas Newman. That's Randy Newman. Well, Danny Elfman's got a sound. And when you hear Oingo Boingo and you hear this, it's like, that's Danny Elfman. Like, they've got a sound. So between the score, between that end credit song, it's Danny Elfman. But the music is very incidental in this. It just supports the film at times. There's some nice orchestral moments, like at the end when all the parents show up with the students to kind of save Shoop's job. That there's some good music in there, or sound or music cues, I should say. So that's what I'm going to say about this score. There was one interesting thing about one of the lyrical songs. It's was it the song Mind Over Matter was released as a single off the soundtrack. It became a top 10 dance hit in the US in 96 in the UK, number 96 in the UK in 88. The song was originally recorded by Debbie Harry, but label disputes caused her recording to go unreleased. And Daly was, that's the artist, Daly Harry, I think, was chosen. E.G. Daly was chosen to sing it instead.
Yes. And if anybody doesn't know who E.G. Daly is, she is Dottie in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
And who did the score for Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
Yep. That was, I think, Danny Elfman's first one.
Yep.
I came across this too, that they released a music video for Summer School that E.G. Daly and the cast of Summer School is in.
Oh, cool.
And I never saw
always this loved those music videos. Yeah.
Yeah. And the music video takes place in the testing room where they take the final remedial English test, and she's on stage instead of Shoop. And then the students get in and join her in her band and just, you know, dance around singing. They show a whole bunch of clips, but I had never heard that before. I mean, I heard the song in the movie, but I never heard it outside of the movie, never heard it on the radio, and I never saw the video for it. So that was kind of cool to see that. And then I was just like, oh my God, it's Dottie. And it's so weird awesome. Because it's like, I've heard her do a couple of songs, and then you hear her voice and you're like, I can't believe this voice sings like this. It's so different. So yeah, that was great. That was a cool little discovery.
That's a fun fact. Yeah. I'm going to circle back around real quick to Danny Elfman, only because if there are listeners out there that aren't familiar with Danny Elfman, this is my suggestion. Go look up Music for a Darkened Theater Compilation Album, Volume 1. That's Music for a Darkened Theater. It's Volume 1. It is a compilation album. I'm just going to rattle off some of this, you know, the music from the iconic scores that Danny Elfman has composed. Maybe you've heard some of these movies, or I should say heard of some of these movies. Pee-wee's Big Adventure, we had mentioned. Batman, I'd mentioned. Dick Tracy, Beetlejuice, Nightbreed, one of my favorites. Darkman, Back to School, Midnight Run, Wisdom, Hot to Trot, Big Top Pee-wee, The Simpsons. Ever heard of that show, Bill?
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
Tales from the Crypt. I'm going to skip to Forbidden Zone and Scrooged. That's Danny Elfman for you. Some huge, huge titles. Also, just get Oingo Boingo's Greatest Hits. That's one of my favorites. It's like greatest hits CDs.
Yeah, and a lot of those songs.
Or I should say, you can just download it now, kids.
But yeah, there's a lot of Oingo Boingo songs in a lot of movies in the 80s, and I'm sure a couple of them will be coming across in future.
Weird episodes. Science.
Yeah. Yep, Weird Science. Yeah, Weird Science being the big one. Dead Man's Party's used in Back to School.
Oh, love that song.
I think he has a song for Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Definitely a lot of Danny Elfman, Oingo Boingo in 80s music and movies.
There you go.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, so we'll move on to our next segment, which is Swiss cheese.
Let's do some Swiss cheese.
Yeah, Swiss cheese and complaint department. So Swiss cheese, we call it Swiss cheese because...
although this movie is delicious, it does have holes.
Yeah, and if it's not a hole, we just file a complaint with the complaint department.
That's right.
Jason, what do you got for Swiss cheese?
I don't have a lot for this, but I'm just going to, you know, I only have a few holes. For me... oh, gosh, I don't even know if this is a hole or more of an issue. I'm just going to start with this anyway. We had mentioned that the school kids and teacher Freddie Shoop enter into a contract and he's going to do a favor for everybody. Well, Courtney Thorne Smith, a.k.a. Pam, who is the spiritual surfer girl, her one favor is to be able to move in with Freddie Shoop, her 30-year-old teacher. And she's only 16. So I don't buy this. I did look at it as a whole, like a 16-year-old moving in with a 30-year-old. Do we chalk this up to the 80s? Because to me, it just doesn't, this would never happen, especially obviously today. But
yeah, I found that really weird because it was A, your brother is kicking you out. And then B, where are your parents?
Well, and then she does actually introduce him to the fam.
Yeah.
Her brother and all the kids and everything. And they all seem to condone this behavior. Like it just wouldn't fly. Like a 16-year-old is just going to crash with her 30-year-old teacher. Like it's crossing all kinds of boundaries here. So I don't know. I just looked at that as a whole. Right. I mean, if, you know, within the context of the movie, the story, et cetera, they make it work because it's part of this story. But
yeah. And plus she has like a major crush on him.
Right. It's so completely inappropriate.
Going to get awkward. Yeah. I kind of found that weird.
Again, when I say it fits within the story, it's because she's down and out. She's kind of getting kicked out. She's being kind of pushed out of her house. And because she's been crashing on a couch and whatever. And so she's in dire straits and he wants to help her. She has nowhere to sleep. So you're kind of like sympathetic, right? You're supposed to be. But you're still looking at this, just going, no, this is all kinds of inappropriate. I don't know. Do something else. Figure something else out.
Yeah, go to the brother and be like, hey, you can't do this to her.
I'm her teacher.
Yeah.
I'm 14 years older than this girl.
You know, or track down the parents, find out what, you know, if the parents are even around. If
yeah. So I took issue with that. Maybe it's more issue than whole, but I just was like, no, this wouldn't happen.
Yeah. Speaking of parents too, because we have Rhonda who's 8 months pregnant and she's going to Le Mans class by herself. I'm like, where are your parents? Why aren't your parents helping you with all that too? I thought that was kind of weird. And that was part of the contract too, that Shoop would go to Le Mans class with Rhonda. So was Shoop going to be in there when she was giving birth? I mean, because if you're the Le Mans coach, you got to be in there.
That's right. That's a good point. That's a good point because that's kind of why you're going, is to help, you know, to see it through.
That wouldn't fly.
Good point, Bill Dant.
Yeah, the school board got a hold of that one.
So also, I'm just bringing up the court proceeding once again, because Freddie Shoop has to go to court to take care of this issue. You know, he's had been arrested for giving alcohol to a minor, and now he's in court, and Bill broke that scene down wonderfully. But here's my question, Bill. Maybe you can help me with this. What kind of court proceeding is this exactly? The judge threatens to arrest Dave for having the fake ID and for purchasing alcohol, like as a minor, he actually threatens him. He's like,
he basically just said, hey, you just confessed to two.
You confessed to two different crimes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, wait, can a judge in the court proceeding, which has nothing to do with that kid, like it's a completely different case he's handling, Freddie Shoop's case. He's not dealing with Dave, this kid, this teenage kid who's broken the law, but still was not arrested. And he brings that up. He's like, okay, well, the arresting officers decided not to go after you, so I'm not going to. But could a judge actually do anything to Dave in that scenario? Like he threatens him. He's like, you just confessed to two different things. I could arrest you. It's like, I don't think you can.
Yeah, I think it was just part of the judge's
just the ruse.
Charm. Yeah.
Like he's just trying to scare Dave a little bit and be a little goofy.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah. He's just playing around with him.
But yeah.
Okay. It caught me off. I was like, wait a minute. Does a judge have some kind of legal authority to arrest someone in his court? Like I'm trying to figure out what's the law.
Yeah. Unless it's like a contempt or I don't.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know the law well enough if that would actually fly. But yeah. If one of our listeners does and they want to
email us, guys, come on. Yeah. We want to hear from our audience. We're doing this for you. Help us help you.
I did have some issues with the court scene, though, because it was, A, why did Shoop have to bring the class? Shouldn't Vice Principal Gill fill in for that day? And why did Vice Principal Gill even go? And even why did Robin go? That made no sense to me that all of them, I mean, the scene doesn't work without them.
And Larry and Anna Maria are there too, I believe.
Yeah.
They're sitting there too. It's great. They decided to be there for emotional support. Which I guess I thought was nice. there's a randomness to the whole court scene, which is just like, this doesn't seem legit at all, but it didn't matter. Because especially like the way, I give you credit, Bill, the way you broke it down too, made it even more funny to me. It's a funny scene. It still is like, I don't give a shit. This is easy fun.
Because in a way, it's almost important to the story because Robin is a teacher there at this. Well, she's teaching summer school there also for honors. And she meets Shoop there. And I was kind of like, wait, don't you know that Shoop teaches at the school? So I was like, maybe she came from another school to teach the class. So,
oh, right. Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of weird at first. I was like, how do they not know each other? Of course, you're in the same faculty. You would know. And I was like, oh, maybe the summer school just happens at that school.
Right.
But they hit it off right away. You could see there's kind of a connection. But
absolutely.
Robin is dating Vice Principal Gill. Trust me, I almost said
president. Is it gills? I think it's plural, as in like he has fish gills.
He's a dick anyway, so I don't have to say his name right.
That's right. We are allowed to mispronounce dickheads' names.
Yeah, it's Gills.
Okay. Phil Gills. Vice Principal Phil Gills.
So Gills is dating Robin at the time.
Right.
But yeah. Shoop is
she's
not,
dating the bad guy.
Yeah. But Shoop's not letting that stop him from constantly hitting on her throughout the movie. And then at the end of the court scene, Gills and Shoop are outside and Gills basically says, yeah, you might have gotten away with court, but I'm going to nail you to the wall and you're not coming back. And of course, Robin comes out and hears all this and sees that Shoop has been right about Gills from the get-go, that he is an asshole, and dumps him there on the spot. So you kind of needed to be there to set that up. Go ahead.
Right. I was just going to say, now here, I had this later on in my deep thoughts for like favorite quotes. So you set me up here because it's great. Because, yeah, like you said, Phil Gills, the vice principal, says, you're done, Shoop. You're done either way. I'm a dick and I'm going to make sure you do not have a job. And Robin overhears it and he turns around and he knows he's busted, but he says to Robin, oh, hey, honey. So, you know, sweetheart, why don't we just go get lunch? And she replies by saying, tell you what, sweetheart, why don't you go ahead and order two lunches and eat them yourself, one for each face.
Nice.
As in like he's two-faced.
Yes.
And I'm like, Bill, is that the ultimate burn of all time?
That might be up there.
Oh, right. Why don't you go ahead, order two lunches and eat them yourself, one for each face. I'm going to use that, Bill. Real life.
Yeah, I don't think that's a quote I've ever had to use again.
So that's good stuff, man. I got another hole.
Go ahead.
Another hole, man. Dude, look, I know it's 1987, but it's also LA, man. And Freddie Shoop is a gym teacher. He's got beachfront property, even though it's small.
I had the same thing.
Afford that?
How exactly. Does he afford it? Every nickel of his salary has got to go to pay that rent.
Yeah, no wonder he's wearing the same t-shirt and shorts every single day.
Because he can't afford and jelly. Eating peanut butter and jelly without bread.
Out of the jar on his fingers. We're going to get into the food situation here in the complaints department because I'm filing food issues, man. Well, those were the holes I had, or issues or whatever the fuck. But yeah, I was like, you know why I'm mad? It's just I'm jealous. I'm like, it makes me mad because I want beachfront property. Sure.
Yeah, I wanted to know how he got it. I don't care how
small the
place was.
I'm like, oh, I just need to be a gym teacher. Shout out to all the gym teachers out there, man. You should be getting paid more. You should be able to afford beachfront property for all the hell they got to deal with in high school.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if that place is even still there. I was like, I'm sure that's been knocked out and raised for condos.
Yeah, no doubt. The actual location. Do you want to move on to complaints department?
I still have one more Swiss cheese.
No. We're moving on. Thanks, no, Bill. Go ahead.
And this goes back to the courtroom scene too. So Shoop gets arrested.
Right.
Who does he call? Robin.
Yeah.
You just met her 3 weeks ago.
Sure.
How did you have her number? And why would you call her? I'm like, don't you have other friends? Don't you have another friend that would you could call to bail you out. I just thought it was weird that he called Robin.
I agree.
But I wouldn't have called her.
That wouldn't be the first phone call.
She would have been the last call. That's like, I'm trying to put the moves on her. I don't need her to know I went to jail.
Oh, yeah. No, it's humiliating. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Good call. Especially when you got arrested with roller.
Just wouldn't that one.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. Yeah.
No. All right. We can move on to the complaint department. What do you got?
Finally. Oh, my God. So have you ever known a gym teacher that takes his dog to school?
I don't know any teacher that would take a pet.
Does that happen?
Any kind of pet.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
That's another thing. Like where you watch it as a kid. And if you're not from LA, you're like, oh man, LA is the coolest. Gym teachers bring their dogs to school. It's so laid back. I want to go to LA.
All right. My first for the complaint department, they go on a field trip. You have an 8-month pregnant girl and they allow her to go on the go-karts. I know we were a little bit lax in the 80s. I don't think we were that lax that we're going to lay an 8-month pregnant girl on.
Yeah, good call.
And then I kept trying to watch the roller coaster scene to see if they put her on the roller coaster, but I'm not 100% sure if she was on it or not. I literally have it set up where it's like, okay, so it was Shoop and Change on the front, and then behind them was Dave and Anna Marie. And
that's great.
Alan and Denise. And then you see Kevin, and I think behind Kevin might be Rhonda, but I'm not 100% sure. Even trying to do the freeze frame, I couldn't make it out. So I was like,
that's funny that you really analyzed it. That's amazing. You were just concerned, man.
Exactly. I was like, that's
Kevin, the two expecting things, mother.
The two things they always say, bad back, pregnant, can't go on.
Good call on that, Bill Bant. Hey, man, here's an issue I have with this movie. Fucking Mark Harmon talking with his mouth full all the time. What the hell is going on with that? Like, it's kind of funny and charming at first. Like, he just doesn't give a crap. Like, he's just eating donuts and like, oh, I'm just this laid back goofball kind of guy and I'm carefree. And then after like the third time he's doing it, I'm like, dude, you're gross. Stop it.
That's funny. I did not catch that. But as soon as you said that, all these scenes are flashing back of him talking with
What are you talking about? Yeah, I'm trying. I'm like, dude,
jelly donut.
Swallow first. Close your mouth.
Jelly. Yep. He's got, yeah.
Well, I'm going to go right into my next issue. He eats donuts, chocolate Pop Tarts, an entire pie, PB&J out of the jars, dryer's ice cream from the tub. How is he not a fat ass?
Oh, I know.
That's what we call fat assing. When you do that, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And he's still in pretty damn good shape.
Yeah. He definitely is one of the best in shape gym teachers I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because you're stereotypical gym teacher.
If you're going to go by stereotype. Yeah.
Because, oh, yeah, I know my gym teacher was not the most svelte looking guy.
Yeah. You know, but we still love you, gym teachers out there. We appreciate what you do. But it's true. And
you know what? I'll take that back because my kids' gym teachers are, they are in very good shape.
Which is more a sign of the times, you know, it makes more sense today. Again, things were a little bit lax back then.
Yes.
But dude, it is funny because of the food he's eaten the whole time. I mean, there's that scene on a bench outside the school, I believe, where he has the pie is still in the tin foil. Like,
I was trying
he's
to
just
that
eating
out.
A like full... He's got a carton of milk and like a, isn't, what was it?
I was trying to guess what pie it was. It looked like a pecan pie.
You wanted.
And I was like, is he not
eating
the crust?
There's typical Bill Bant. He's freeze framing the shots of the kids on the roller coaster to figure out if the pregnant girl's on there. Now he's freeze framing the shots of the pie to figure out what kind of pie he's eating. He's just got like a fork in the pie and a milk carton of milk. It's hilarious. It's freaking amazing. What other... issues are you filing with this complaint department, Bill?
Shoop as a teacher, it's the last day of class, and he's giving his students their grade cards. Right. And I was like, and then he's running off to Hawaii. I'm like, was he going to turn these in? When was he going to turn these in? Did he accidentally fail that whole last class because they didn't have grades? You're all going to get incomplete.
Right. I do love the immediacy of the fact that his girlfriend Kim shows up in the gym.
Yes.
Like they are literally at 3 o'clock or whatever, going to walk out the door, get in the car and go to the airport.
Yeah, that's real smart. Have a 21-year-old girl run into a gym with a bunch of horny 16-year-olds. Yeah,
just all of it looks bad.
I mean, they all look like they're 25, but...
True, that was the other thing. That's an issue unto itself. I think in this movie, a lot of them look a little bit older than 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. But that was the 80s, guys. 80s movies.
Yes.
So here's an issue I have.
Oh, go ahead.
Go, man.
Because this is actually a Swiss cheese.
Oh, okay.
I missed this one.
Well, let's go back to Swiss cheese, man.
Maybe you can answer this for me because I missed it. How did Shoop end up in the strip club running into Larry? That's never explained. Is it? Did I miss something?
Oh, like what?
Why did he end up there? What was the purpose?
Because a great point. Now I can't recall.
Because
why did he go there in the first place?
Because he kind of does that awkward thing where he tries to talk to that woman and like, oh yeah, I'm with Playgirl magazine, and she blows him off. And then we see the dancer who happens to be Larry, and that's how he figures out why Larry's sleeping all the time, because he's moonlighting as a stripper, making a ton of money.
Right.
But I couldn't figure out. I was like, well, what brought him there to the strip club? Because there was something. Because the scene before is when he's eating the peanut butter and jelly and feeding it to Wonder Mutt.
Oh, it's because, you know what, it was because he says he's looking for, there's a woman out there for me. He's looking for women, and you assume he's going to a strip club to see, or that's what I thought at first.
But that's still,
make sense because, something doesn't add up. That's, because it's a male strip club.
Exactly. And if I was a woman and I'm there to see male stripper and then a random guy's in there, go away. That made no sense to me. I don't know why. I just wish a better setup of how we figure out
something
he's been doing was moonlighting us.
Right. Something was missing there.
Yeah. I mean,
connecting the dots. Yeah. Between scenes.
Yeah. They said a lot of stuff was cut out. So maybe that's one of the missing scenes, but that just seemed really weird. It's like he's sitting on the beach eating peanut butter and jelly, and next thing you know, he's at the strip club. I'm like, wait, what? What happened? Why is he here?
Totally.
I mean, it was a cool reveal to find out what Larry's been doing the whole time. I mean, that was cool, but how they got to that made no sense.
Right.
All right. So sorry, that was my last Swiss cheese on.
Oh no, it's great, man. Really. That was great. Here's an issue I have. Kevin, the football jock.
Mm-hmm.
That blue Lycra half shirt he's wearing, or whatever the hell that is. What the fuck was that? I don't know. That scared me when he first shows up. You know, it was the first time we see it, I believe, is when they decide to go to the library just to kill time. And half the class decides to ditch as they're walking to the library.
Oh, that we never see again.
Yeah. And then a few of them get caught by the school security guard, I guess. And they come back. And one of them is Kevin, and he's wearing this blue half shirt, like the skin tight half shirt. And I was just like, oh no, that's a bad decision. And then poor Pam, our spiritual surfer girl, she gets caught somehow. I don't know how. So is the high school literally on the beach? And was she caught surfing? And she comes back, she gets caught, and she has to come back to class in her wetsuit.
Yeah. So supposedly, because they do the shot where she's looking out the window and she's watching the surf.
Right. And she says, it's that time of the month. I've got female problems and you have to go. And he lets her leave the class. And we know that she's going surfing.
And the class knows she's going surfing.
Yeah. Dave calls her out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then how does she actually get, now I'm just thinking about it, how did she actually get busted surfing? And then she doesn't get to change back into her regular clothes. She's,
Well, she wasn't wet, so we don't even know. She probably never even made it to the
surf. Yeah. Well, you know.
But then again, we always find that continuity error when wet, dry.
Right.
But
But
that actually goes back to the class itself, because when Shoop comes in the first time, that class is twice the size.
Totally.
Half the students disappear.
It keeps dwindling. Yeah.
And then one of them randomly appears in the chainsaw scene because he's playing the hand. And
right.
I'm like, oh, there's that he's guy back. Again. And then he's gone again. So that was kind of weird.
There's a little inconsistency there.
Yeah.
That's funny. So I'm going to go through these last couple issues I had real quick. They both take place in the first field trip scene with the roller coaster and the petting zoo, et cetera. I just had another wardrobe issue here with our guy, Freddie Shoup. He's wearing a black like Rolling Stones t-shirt tucked into his Hawaiian shorts. Just doesn't not a great look for our guy. Not even Mark Harmon can pull that off. And while he's wearing that shirt, see, not only was I upset with that ensemble, but so was the goat that was behind him in the scene. And the goat starts chewing on his shirt. And this is where I get it. This is my only issue, probably the whole film. With like, I was like, there's a little slight animal cruelty here. Shoup's a little rough on that goat. Keeps pushing the goat's face away, like shoving the goat, like, get off me, get off me. And I'm like, wait a minute. Where's the, I'm already looking for the disclaimer. The no animals were harmed in the making of this film.
I should have freeze framed that.
Yeah, right. Send me a screenshot. That's all I got for issues, man. Okay. I didn't get too nitpicky otherwise.
Right. So let's move on to our next segment, which would be, hey, it's that actor.
All right.
So in this segment, we spotlight a character actor you have seen in many other films, an actor making their big screen debut, or an actor that makes an uncredited cameo. So for me, my actress is Laura Waterbury, who plays Mrs. Grimp, who is Chainsaw's mom. And her big line in the movie is, how do you want your eggs, fried or scrambled? And then that's when Chainsaw's like, I don't know. I don't know. But her most famous role as a mom was as Ricky's mom, Mrs. Smith, in Better Off Dead.
Oh, wow.
I'm really sorry your mom blew up, Ricky. So she also had other roles in 80s films such as Mac and Me, Inner Space, and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. So my, hey, it's that actor, is Laura Waterbury.
That's a good one, man.
Ricky's mom.
I like it. That's very good. So for my, hey, it's that actor, I am going with Amy Stock, who played Kim, who plays our guy, Freddie Shoup's girlfriend in the beginning. They're supposed to run off to Hawaii, but they don't quite get there. But she decides she's going to go to Hawaii by herself. And immediately I'm like, oh, who's the cute blonde? She certainly looks familiar, and there's a good reason for that. She was in another iconic 80s movie, a little movie called Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. She plays Missy, a.k.a. the hot stepmom. And becomes a recurring role for her because she's in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure 2, Bogus Journey. And the most recent iteration, Bill and Ted Face the Music, which just came out a year ago.
She was in that one too?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So Amy Stock.
Well, that's a good one. I did not catch that at all.
Yeah, she certainly looked familiar to me. I'm like, that face. I know that face. What else was she in? And it makes sense.
I'll admit, Jason, this is the first time watching it. I had no clue who you were going to pick.
Oh, yeah. Right. Really, yeah. You usually have like, that's one of your, like your sixth sense.
Yeah. So moving on to facts and trivia. Jason, what do you got for some facts and trivia?
Oceanfront High. That was the same school that was used for the filming of The Karate Kid in 1984.
Yes. That school is nowhere near the ocean. I think it's in Woodland Hills. And the real name of the school is Charles Evans Hughes Junior High School.
That's great. And supposedly, yes, it was also used in the second Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes. Very popular school. So this is very interesting. I didn't know this. So Mark Harmon's father, Tom Harmon, played college football for the University of Michigan from 1938 to 1940. He led the nation in scoring. It was a consensus All-American in both 1939 and 1940 and won the Heisman Trophy, the Maxwell.
Oh, my God.
And the Associated Press Athlete of the Year in 1940. And he was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1954. Like, I knew Mark had played football, but I didn't realize his dad was so decorated.
That's great. And it makes sense. Yeah, Mark himself is an athlete and was able to help his student, Kevin, with his football. That's the favor he does for him. Because Mark Harmon himself was the QB at UCLA in the 1970s. Part of that little fun fact, too, is that the uniform colors for UCLA were the same as the Oceanfront Sharks.
Yes. So Ken Oland, hopefully I said that name right, who played Larry in the movie, said in an interview that, and Larry's the character who's always sleeping in the movie until you find out he's at the strip club.
Right.
So he said that when they were shooting, the first scenes they shot for that movie were the strip club stuff. So he did all his acting up front and then basically just slept through the rest of the movie. After that, all he did was sleep. So it's like he did all this good stuff first, and then he's like, yep, all I did after that was just come on set and go to sleep.
Amazing. That's great. I do have one other small fun fact here. It says that the Hawaiian shirt that Mark Harmon wears is the same exact, here's the brand, Duke Kahanamoku model shirt that Montgomery Clift wears in the feature film From Here to Eternity. 1953.
Last one for me is just the ages of the actors when at the time of filming, because it was kind of fun of that.
Of course.
So Courtney Thorne Smith, who played Pam, was 19.
Okay.
Dean Cameron, who played Chainsaw, was 24. Gary Riley, who was Dave, was 23. Shawnee Smith was the youngest of the group. Rhonda, she was 17. Fabiana Anna Marie was 22. Richard Steven Horowitz, who was Alan, was 20. And the oldest of the group was Larry, played by Ken Orlin, who we just mentioned a couple of minutes ago. He was 28
at
the time of filming. There you go. So Shawnee Smith was the only one that was kind of close to actually being a high school student.
Right. And I know it's that actor, Amy Stock. She was 28 and she's playing a 21-year-old.
1 year old, yes.
So there you go.
All right.
I always like that. Those stats.
Did you have anything else before we moved on?
That's it for fun fast trivia, man. We can move on.
All right. So let's move on to the box office. So the movie was released on Wednesday, July 22nd, 1987. I could not find the budget of this movie, but its opening weekend, it placed number 3 with $6 million and would go on to gross $35.1 million. And it was funny because I always thought this movie was considered a flop, but it actually has grossed more than some of the other movies we've discussed on this podcast. So it beat out No Way Out, The Running Man, and Can't Buy Me Love in 1987.
Damn, there you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because every time I hear something about that, they were saying how it was a disappointment. And I saw an interview with the cast, and they even thought they considered the movie to be a disappointment and really thought it was going to launch their careers because it was going to be this big hit. But they were like, no, it didn't do that great. So moving on to reviews. So when growing up in the early 80s, you know, we love catching at the movies with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert to hear the reviews and watch clips from upcoming movies. Their opinion of Summer School was unanimous. Two very, 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 very strong thumbs down. Gene referred to it as a dim-witted project, and Roger called it a nothing film. And there's a funny story. Patrick, I can't like last name.
Plays Kevin.
It was his birthday, so he's having a party, and he actually had the cast come over to his house to watch at the movies together to see the review of the film.
Right,
and they saw that, like, they killed it. They didn't understand why Mark Harmon wanted to do this. They just thought it was horrible, and they were crushed. They were crushed.
Oh, my God.
For the day and age of internet or newspaper and stuff like that. So ended up not being the best of birthday parties.
Oh, that's awful. That's too bad. Yeah, I read that Roger Ebert gave the film a half out of 4 stars. A half a star. He called it listless, leisurely, and unspirited. But I think calling it a nothing film...
Yeah, that's what he says. Harsh. A nothing film. Yeah, I would. It is a leisurely film. I agree with that.
Nothing wrong with that,
but in a good way. But not. Yeah, I would say it's one of those films. Like, if you get a chance to check it out, you're not going to be like, oh, why did I just waste?
Right.
I just think there's enough fun things in it that it's good. But yeah, I think leisurely is the best way to describe this movie.
It's the perfect word.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to final thoughts. What are our final thoughts of Summer School?
First off, you know, I'd hate to be an extra in the classroom scenes where almost everybody has a line but me. Because we talked about, like, there's the, like, the class is kind of full, and then it just kind of dwindles down throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Some kids come and go. This is like the self-centered actor in me. It'd be like, man, that would kind of suck to be like one of the kids that, you know, you're sitting there and there's seven other like protagonists, like main characters that have all these lines, and you just got to sit there as an extra knowing that you're going to disappear in the next scene. It's just, it's always funny to me though, but you see it all the time in any kind of high school movie like that, where the other extras just kind of come and go or disappear. It's just thought I had. So I love the scene where they're, you know, this is going to get, I'm going to get into some quotes here. Some of my favorite quotes from the movie, in the scene where it's the very opening scene after Shoop takes roll call. We get introduced to all the characters, and then his keys go missing. And he's like, okay, I'm through this shit. And they're like, oh, we can swear in this class. And they start swearing. It's here's some of the lines that you hear in the background, which is just funny. You hear shit, eat rocks, dick brain, rectal thermometer. This is what they're calling each other. Suck my loggerhead, anal abscess. Ekian emphasizes, damn it. It's just funny to me, you know, because it's 80s, right? But you get some of them, like things like dick brain, but somebody called somebody else a rectal thermometer and somebody else said, eat rocks. Like that was an actual thing that people said. Very funny. I love when Freddie Shoop kind of goes out and after he realizes that vice principal Phil Gills is dating Robin, he walks up to him and goes, I'll be damned, you're a heterosexual. And Gills responds, and a damn good one.
There you go.
I love it. Freaking Dave and Chainsaw, man, when they're talking about their fandom of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and they mention the director's name, or at least Chainsaw does and pronounces it, Tobey Hooper.
Oh, yeah. I was like, wait, have I been saying it wrong all this time? Well, I heard him say that too.
But then when they actually screen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the classroom, which is great, they actually screen the movie in the classroom. The lights are out and it's gory and horrific. And it's towards the end of the movie. And you see, you know, one of the guys get run over by the semi truck in the movie. And you hear Chainsaw kind of narrating in the background. He goes, that's not a real person. It's a stuntman. Yeah. And then you see Leatherface like chainsaw his own leg. He goes, see, now this right here isn't going to bother him because he's insane. Just the great line. Another one for me is when Teach says, everyone take your seats. And Dave and Chainsaw literally lift him up and go, where should we take him?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. During the test sequence, when the time is running out and Dave starts, because it's one of those Scantrons. And you got to, you know, A, B, C, D.
Yes.
And Dave's going C, 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 just filling it like, because he's got to fill and finish the test. That's such a typical like high school thing that so many of us ended up doing. We literally would do that because you're just like law of averages. Like for some reason, we thought you would get the percentages be in your favor. You get more answers right if you filled them all out by filling in C. There's a great studying montage in this movie. You got to have it in high school movies. There's got to be some sort of like, we talked about that with Real Genius. There's some good studying montages in there. This is so subtle, but this is something I would do when I would be so like by the book when you're getting ready to do the test. And there was always that announcement, please take out your number two pencil.
Yes.
You can see in the background, Ekian actually look at the pencil to make sure it's a number two. That's something I totally would have done. Like I did. I'd be like, yes, I have, this is a number two pencil. This is it. This pencil is okay to use for this test.
Did anyone ever have a different number pencil? I don't really think I've ever held a different pencil than a number two. I would like to see what one of those other, like a number four pencil would look like.
And speaking of the number four pencil, that's great. Speaking of the test sequence, I have to give a shout out here to Shoop because I was complaining about his eating habits earlier. What's he eating here at the end? An apple.
There you go.
He's eating an apple. So thus his journey, his arc is complete. He went from unhealthy to healthy foods at the very end here.
That's true. He did come full circle. He became a teacher and he became a healthy eater.
Yeah, just a mature, healthier person in the end.
Wow, the symbolism with that apple. I'm sure someone could write a paper on it. So there is some snob movie person that's writing about the symbolism of the apple, how it makes
complete teacher. Yes. So here's a little, this is kind of fun fact trivia stuff, but I actually went back and I pulled a Bill Bant and I paused a million times. You're going to love, here we go. Okay. So this is actually because of a deleted scene. In the scene where Shoop teaches his students how to write a complaint letter, some of the lyrics to the James Brown song, Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, are visible on the blackboard, the front of the classroom. So that's actually left over from a deleted scene in which Shoop diagrams and sings the song for the class, Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, the James Brown song. So I was like, what is written on the blackboard? Because it looked really funny, as if it was like translating slang into proper English. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this all down, and it's hilarious because the slang is like, but it's actually the lyrics from the song on one side, on the left-hand side, and then the counterparts on the right-hand side. So it reads on the left-hand side, hey there, sister, which equals come in here, sister. Papa's in there safe, which means your father is safe in there. Ain't you hip equals don't you comprehend? What the new breed say equals what the hybrid is communicating. Ain't no drag equals it's not unpleasant. Papa's got a brand new bag means your father has a brand new hobby.
Impressive. That's impressive.
Well, it's just funny because they literally took the time to write it all out on the chalkboard. And I'm like, what is this on the chalkboard? But that was all a result of a deleted scene, just translating the lyrics from Papa's Got a Brand New Bag into proper English because it's remedial English class.
Yeah, it is funny that a 97-minute movie about summer school and he does 5 minutes of teaching.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, it's not like one of those films where, yeah, let's use stuff and show how that we're accidentally making you teach. I think the complaint letter is the only example of that, and they never really show anything else.
But my last thought here, I'm just going to give a shout out to our makeup artists, Sherry Mins, Greg Nelson, and then the uncredited special makeup effects by the aforementioned Rick Baker and also Norman Cabrera. The makeup effects were awesome in this movie.
Yes. So I had a quick question.
Yeah, we can get it. Hey, we can get into questions. Let's do it.
So maybe I have two questions. So which of the students do you think had the most successful career after this movie came out? Who would you put as your top two? Because they all went on to do other things. If you were to rank them like career-wise, here's the number one. I'm just talking about the students. I'm not talking about Harmon or Kirstie.
I thought you were doing like a hypothetical, which one of these students would go on to have a decent, which is another question unto itself. So which of the actors do you think would have the most successful career?
Or who do you think has since that movie?
Well, Courtney Thorne Smith jumps out at me because of Melrose Place. And then she was in the, was it Jim? Is that the name of the sitcom? Was that the Jim Belushi one?
She was in that one. Yeah. Yeah, she did.
But she became became a household name. Mm-hmm. Shawnee Smith has a prolific career. I love when she pops up in Armageddon. She has a bit part in that, which gets me every time. It's really funny. It's with Steve Buscemi. It's near the beginning of the film when he's telling her that she's wearing a fake ring. She's showing, and he's like, you know, that's fake. And she's like, oh, it's like, anyway, who else though would I have thought?
Yeah. Cause she's the Saw series. She was in Becker.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she's done a lot of stuff too. And then even Patrick Kevin, he was in JAG. So, I mean, that show had a good run. Is it NCIS? Is it a spinoff mm-hmm. that Mark Harmon has been doing now for almost 20 years?
Yeah, that was one of my questions for you, actually.
Oh, was it? Okay.
We'll just get into it right now. First of all, have you ever watched an entire episode of NCIS?
I think I've seen the Los Angeles one, but I've never seen a full one with the Mark Harmon.
I think I've actually watched one. Can you tell me what the acronym NCIS stands for?
Is the N at least naval?
You got that much, yeah.
And that's about as far as I can go.
Naval Criminal Investigative Service.
Oh, I might have got investigation.
It's actually investigative.
Oh, see?
I would have screwed it up. Eh. I have it right in front of me. I had to write it down.
Okay.
Sorry, back to your question, man. I went on a segue.
It's okay. I had no idea that Gary Riley, who played Dave, was in Stand By Me.
Oh, yeah. See, that's funny because he did do...
So they've all done other things. But I was kind of torn between Courtney Thorne Smith or Shawnee Smith, who would be like the top.
Yeah.
See, because I'm more of a movie person, so I might have said Shawnee because I see her more in movies, where Courtney Thorne Smith is definitely more television. I mean, she's been doing steady television since this came
out. For sure. I think Courtney Thorne Smith, just because Melrose Place is such an iconic pop culture staple next to like 90210, right?
Yeah.
So, interestingly enough, you know, she is not billed very high in the movie as a cast member, like in the credits, in the opening credits. But because of her rising star and fame as a result of Melrose Place in previous, or I should say later releases of the movie, she got bumped to third on the billing. They moved her up in the credits, which was funny.
I think the one that I'm surprised didn't do as much was Dean Cameron.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. You would have thought for sure. I think he's so naturally, his delivery is so natural in the movie, and he has great comic timing. So I would agree.
For me, I guess he was always competing against Curtis Armstrong for roles. And he must have been losing it, because that's what he kind of, that's where I would have put him, in like that Curtis Armstrong.
See, it's funny because I was thinking more like Judd Nelson, but I don't know. Yeah, I think he's great in this. I like, because he's, outside of Mark Harmon, he's really the one that I associate with this movie.
Yeah.
Chainsaw.
Yes.
He's the standout.
I agree with that. Yeah, I certainly agree with that.
And a lot, yeah. But look at, like, much respect to all these actors, because they still, a lot of them are still working. Like, you look at their IMDb, they're in one aspect of the industry or another.
Yeah.
They've been doing stuff. So it's pretty cool.
Oh, and then, okay. So then I would, so my next question is, ranking their storylines in the film, where would you put them?
Ranking their storylines in the film, like, yeah.
Like, they're kind of their backstories. Like, we probably still have Dave and Chainsaw as one.
Yeah, I actually thought Larry was cool because you find out why he's sleeping the whole time.
Yeah, I might have put him two or three. Kevin, I would have put last as the football.
Right, and then, you know, kind of just above him, I got to go, I don't know, Alan Ekian's thing is, what is, he's just trying to impress his grandma?
Yeah, like, that's
do right
true.
By her. So he's got to be down there, maybe just above Kevin. So yeah, tops would be Chainsaw and Dave. We get, Rhonda's got a pretty, you know, decent art. I mean, she's somewhere in between.
But then they have the whole thing with her and Kevin. And I felt that didn't develop at all. I found that kind of weak. Like
Rhonda's got the dyslexia.
Denise.
Or not Rhonda, sorry, Denise, thank you.
Yeah, I'd move Denise. Denise would be in my top three because of the driving thing and you find out
she has dyslexia.
Yeah.
Right. So combo platter there. What else?
Anna Marie is just more eye candy. She doesn't really have any kind of story. She's just there to learn English.
Right. So she's lower down. Here's my number one, actually. It's got to be Jerome. We didn't even mention Jerome.
No, we did not.
He is introduced during the roll call at the beginning of the movie. He's like a 6'5" African-American gentleman who looks like a football player, who he would go on, that actor, to play in a football player.
Yes.
Yeah. He's very familiar. He could definitely could have been, hey, it's that actor.
Yes.
I considered him, actually. So you name a football movie in the next 10 years after this, even probably longer after that, he's in it.
He was in the program. He's actually one of the football players in Beetlejuice. He's in a ton of stuff. His dad was a football player, actually. Yeah.
Look at you, man. Do you deep dive research, man? But anyway, he plays Jerome. He is not to be messed with. And he goes to the bathroom right after roll call and is never to be seen from again. Until the very end, he shows up for the actual test, and he gets the best grade on the test. He gets
the highest score. He gets the 91,
and that's hilarious because he has no backstory at all. He disappears, comes back.
Yep.
So technically, he would be at the bottom, but still, it's the funniest. That's a good question, man. Because I was thinking about that. Like, you've got to give this ensemble cast all some sort of backstory, right? And they have to have these mini arcs. Because they all have to learn something, right? Or grow somehow.
Yeah, because they were saying, the cast was saying in an interview that the first cut of the movie was almost 3 hours long.
So what?
You know, they cut out a lot of stuff.
Dang. Yeah, no doubt about it. 3 hours?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's funny. Yeah, and then you have Courtney Thorne Smith. So you have Pam's. Where's she in this ranking?
I'd kind of put her in the middle because, I mean, she has like the crush thing, but it's just weird that I wish they kind of focused on what her issue was.
If there was a family life kind of, she has something rough going on at home where she, yeah, maybe it wasn't just that there's too many kids in the house. She didn't have any room to sleep kind of thing.
Yeah.
She had to live with, she needed to move in. It was more, there was a deeper reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. It was just okay. Yeah, I put her in the middle of the pack too.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff, man. I like it. I like what you're thinking. Do you think Dave and Chainsaw deserve their own movie review podcast?
Yeah, they should.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
I think that. So the funny thing is, because they do their own At the Movies review, like they're reviewing Texas Chainsaw Massacre for Anna Maria in the beginning of the movie. And then they continually do like a thumbs up, thumbs down kind of thing, type of back and forth movie style review or movie review style kind of way of bantering and talking throughout the movie, which is very funny. And I was like, oh, these guys could do easily their own movie review show, or it'd be like if these two characters were the same age with the same type of banter today, they would have a great podcast. The Dave and Chainsaw.
I think their episodes would be a lot shorter than ours, that's for sure.
Right. That's true. Last but not least, here's my last question is regarding that fun fact I mentioned earlier about Mark Harmon was wearing the same Hawaiian shirt that Montgomery Clift was wore in From Here to Eternity. I was going to ask you, what's a more romantic make out on a beach scene? Was it Here at the End of Summer School or the most famous scene, which is from that 1953 film, From Here to Eternity?
Yeah, you can't beat From Here to Eternity.
That is number one. Yes. It's number one on every list. But you think about all the romantic, you know, beach scenes in all the movies you've seen, you know,
oh, yeah.
Not just because I'm narrowing it down to an actual like make out roll around in the sand with the water washing over you
right.
scene, which you don't get all that often, but there are a million meet cutes on the beach or just kissing in front of the sunset. I mean, how many and how would you even rank those? I mean, that I was entertaining maybe asking you that question, but there's just too many.
The next two people on a beach scene that popped in my head was actually Grease with, you know,
that's when I did a little bit of a little research that popped up. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be the next one that kind of pops in my head of a couple on the beach together.
And I'm thinking of movies either we've already done or will do. And Splash was one for me.
Oh, okay.
When she comes out of the water, she rescues him and brings him up on the beach.
And I wonder how many of them take place on that same stretch of beach too.
Yeah. Right. But then I was thinking there's even like a little beach scene in Karate Kid. Daniel LaRusso gets his ass kicked. But yeah. So anyway, there's numerous beach scenes, but yep. From Here to Eternity. That's the number one makeout beach scene.
Number one answer on the board.
That's all I got. Well, did you have anything else? I was just going to make my closing statement otherwise.
No, go for it.
Hey, man, you know, this is all I'm going to say. This film simply makes me happy. Learning can be fun, and enjoy the summer, everybody, because you can't take life too seriously. And that's, as Bill had said, and as Roger Ebert said in different context, it's leisurely. This film is just leisure fun. And I do recommend it. And if you just want to kick back and relax and watch an entertaining movie, have some chuckles and not think too much, watch this movie. You'll be better off for it because it'll put you in a better mood. That's my opinion.
Jason, I thought you summed it up well. I don't think I could say anything better myself. So what Jason said.
Thanks for the support, Bill. Thanks.
I endorse it. All right, so I think that about wraps it up for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the first episode of our Summer at the Cinema series. Our second movie will be Dirty Dancing, starring Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey. As always, please subscribe and rate us. You can email us at all80smoviespodcast@gmail.com. Please send us your feedback, questions, or recipes to share. You can follow us on Facebook at All 80s Movies Podcast or tweet us at Podcast All 80s. Until then, have a totally great week, everyone.
Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, world.